I'd like to call the August 2nd meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAfee? Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of this legislature meeting for the purpose of a personnel discussion. The next item of business is privilege of the floor for the public. We have a number of people who've signed up on these blue sheets. If you have not signed up, you are welcome to do that, or you can wait until after everybody else has spoken and then just come to the microphone. We have a three-minute time limit for folks, and Kathy will help you keep track of that. So she's got a 1 minute to go, and then a time is up sign. First is Marilyn Kenner, and then Nancy Buriano.
Thank you for giving me this time. Is this on? Yes? Okay, good. I'm Marilyn Kinner, and I'm the past director of Lifelong, and I just retired from the Gerontology Institute at Ithaca College. And I'm here to address the issue of COPA moving up to the Brown Road facility. I'm really concerned about that. The fact that it's always been downtown and really close to Lifelong. By the way, when I was there, it was the Tompkins County Senior Citizens Council, and I may revert to calling that by error. And a couple of things I want to make you aware of. One is, first of all, I live in Trumansburg, and when I use TCAT, which I do quite frequently, I can't get to anywhere unless I use two buses. And when I was using it to get to work, I had a 25-minute wait between buses to get up the hill to Ithaca College. So for those who don't drive, seniors who don't drive, I think it's going to be a really difficult place to access. And I'm sure there are going to be lots of waiting periods for buses. The other thing is that in the city, you have the three largest senior residences, Titus Towers and McGraw House. And these are people who are low income by the very fact that they're in these facilities and frequently need the services of COPA. Regarding my experience when I was director of Lifelong, we work very, very closely with the Office for the Aging in many, many projects. We have people who used to come into the senior center who needed the help of COPA. They would tell us their issues. And it was so great to be able to send them down a block to the Office for the Aging. And I think that's going to be an issue. And I'm sure Lifelong is still experiencing that. So the fact when I heard that they were going to move to State Street, I was really pleased to hear that because it seemed such a great location for a majority of the seniors in this county. For me, if I stop driving, which I think will happen one day, I can get on one bus and be downtown, and it will stop for me pretty close to the Office for the Aging, and I'm assuming that's true for many, many other seniors. So I realize these are difficult fiscal times, and these are really difficult situations for you to have to make a choice on, but I urge you to think very carefully about how the most vulnerable population, or one of the most vulnerable populations in this county, which is increasing, are going to be served. And I think as the funding cuts occur, which they are happening now, and I fear will continue, I think the Lifelong and the Office for the Aging are going to have to work much more closely together than they have in the past to make these programs work. So thank you for your time.
Nancy Bariano, and then Bill Halton.
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Nancy Bariano. I will be 69 years old in August. I have lived in Tompkins County for 43 years. I am a former businesswoman. I ran a publishing company for 15 years, and I understand from that point of view, as someone who did not get paid a salary unless my employees got paid a salary first, I do understand the difficulties of shortfalls. Okay, so I in no way minimize the financial difficulties that the county is currently facing, and I think that I understand some of the both pragmatic and emotional issues that come up around having to make very difficult decisions because of a limited amount of financial resources. I intend to grow old, as I already am, in Tompkins County, and there are increasing issues of disability amongst people as they grow older. That's just a statistical fact. Unfortunately, I came to my disabilities earlier than I would have liked to, but they are a part of my life, and they will be increasingly part of almost all older people's lives, no matter how healthy our lifestyle, no matter what food we eat, no matter how green our lives are, et cetera, et cetera. It's the process of growing old that helps to create those disabling conditions. I have worked professionally around issues of aging, specifically with the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities, and I received an award from the county several years ago for doing that work. Now, the over 65 population constitutes the fastest growing age cohort nationally and here. Okay, the boomer generation, of which I'm on the little advance end of statistically, is going to create a tsunami of needs and the required services that come along with just the natural functions of aging. Our country, has an incredibly bad habit of long-standing duration of wanting its elderly, especially its sick and disabled and not vibrant elderly, its old, rather than its young old, to be not visible. Any history book that you read, any sociological analysis, will tell you that and will say it's been a real shame that that's been the kind of values that have been supported in this country. So to put the Office of the Aging in a place where if seniors can get there, they will be invisible to the entire rest of the population is continuing in this really very politically backward way of approaching the quite natural process that you will all go through, if you're lucky, of growing old.
Please wrap up, Nancy. Time is up.
In addition, I know that this board has been very interested in having retired people move to this county to help increase the economic base. I think it's a very bad example to put the agency, which will provide them the principal amount of their services, in a place where it's not accessible and they will not be seen.
Okay,
I think it's short-sighted.
Thank you, Nancy. Bill Halton and then Joe Wilson.
Hello, thanks for giving us a chance to speak. Mine is going to be very short. I'm a retired Ithaca High School mathematics teacher. I live in Danby. And my wife and I use the bus on a regular basis, and it would be very inconvenient for us to have the COFA office located other than downtown. I hope that you will do everything in your power to keep that downtown. I remember when the YMCA was downtown and young people could walk over to the YMCA. That was before they made it into the Lansing Country Club. So I hope that you will do everything in your power to keep the COFA office downtown. I have served on the COFA Advisory Council, And I know the importance of the office and how much they do for us as seniors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Joe Wilson and then Marie McRae.
Good evening. I'm Joe Wilson. I live in Ellis Hollow. I'm here to talk about the protection of roads through your legislation. And most of you probably by this time have seen the leaked internal memo from the Department of Transportation, which indicates that hundreds of miles of state and local road and scores of bridges will have to be repaired in the face of the heavy trucks and the expansion of traffic that will come with the advent of the fracking industry. The costs will either be on our shoulders as local taxpayers, or the costs will come out of the services that you are already cutting back because of the governor's new tax cap, or it will come from the users of the roads. I'm here to ask you to make sure that your legislation puts the full cost of the use of the roads, the destruction of the roads, the damage to the bridges, and the upgrades that will need to be done on the shoulders of those who are going to use the roads. In particular, I'd like you to make sure that your threshold for triggering some kind of use fee is low enough so that all of those who are making private profit from the use of our roads with heavy trucks will have to pay, and that you then make the fees sufficient to make sure that the damages are repaired, the roads and bridges are competently upgraded. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Marie McRae, and then Marcia Fort.
Good afternoon. I'm Marie McRae. I live on a county road in Dryden. And because Joe has addressed the roads issue very eloquently, I will make mine short and sweet. I am here to say thank you to each and every member of this body who has worked so hard to bring a road protection ordinance forward. Thank you for every meeting, every conversation, every late night. Let's move that forward and get it done. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie. Marcia, and then Pastor Ronald Benson. Marcia Fort? Okay.
I'm here to read to this August body a statement by what we call the community leaders of color. That's in our community. And it's to the Ithaca Common Council and to the Tompkins County Legislature. This is my first time here. I've been in Ithaca for 23 years, and I've never been here before.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. We, the undersigned community leaders of color, CLOC better known, are writing to express our deep disappointment at the failure of this elected representative to pass a resolution in support of the continued independence of Africana Studies and the Research Center. We feel the need to comment on the county legislature's and the Common Council's unwillingness to make the gesture of standing with citizens in the community who appreciate Africana and many contributions to the people of Ithaca and who are deeply about Africana future. We do, however, wish to sincerely thank the vocal minority among you who voted yes and stood with the community in respect of the friendship with Africana. It would have cost nothing for the Common Council or the county legislators to pass the resolution and to lend your leadership to a reasonable request for continued dialogue, something requiring no allocation of public funds or resources. 62% of the property in Ithaca is tax exempt, due largely to the enormous amount of real estate Cornell owns. The university enjoys significant financial benefits from this arrangement, how risky would it have been to challenge the Cornell to engage in further deliberation with all of its stakeholders? Both Cornell and Ithaca College are currently engaged in discussions about how to promote greater civic engagement and more meaningful town and grown partnership. If Cornell would wants its vision for civic engagement to take seriously and to encourage the Cornelians to view themselves as part of our community, opening a respectful and inclusive dialogue about Africana structure is the obvious way to demonstrate that it welcomes the engagement of multiple perspectives. Here was an opportunity for you, our elected representatives, to advocate for a respectful, rational process that could bring and begin healing what has been a significant affront to distinguished and reverenced residents of our city. And by doing so, affirm that the Africana is a valued part of the greater Ithaca community. In this instance, long-time Ithaca residents, faculty, grad students, and more recently members of the Cornell and Ithaca community have made extraordinary, eloquent appeals to the institution, the city, the county, yet you have rejected the opportunity to speak out on our behalf. We recognize that neither the Common Council nor the legislators has the authority to override Cornell's decisions regarding this matter, irrespective of whether Cornell reopens the decision to move Africana to the College of Arts and Science. We see your failure to approve this resolution as another example of how institutional racism operates. In spite of all of the rhetoric of our public officials championing equity, diversity, and the value of inclusive processes, where decisions are made with the input to those who will most be affected.
Thank you, Pastor.
Sorry.
Your time is up.
We are sorry. We are sorry.
You could submit the entire written statement if you'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have Irene Weister, and she's the last one who's signed up. But if anybody else would like to speak, you can step to the mic after Irene.
Hi, I'm Irene Weiser, and I'm a resident in the town of Caroline for the past 20 years. And I, too, am here today to speak about the proposed road preservation ordinance and to thank Carol and Mike for your hard work and leadership on your committees and being available to me to answer questions. And to the rest of the committees that worked so hard on this, and really, frankly, to this whole board for all of the initiative you've taken to protect us in the face of the kind of onslaught we may face with heavy industrialization in this county. I know as somebody in the town of Caroline, I know that we are looking forward to this road preservation ordinance as something that in our town we can use as a model to figure out how we address this at the town level, and I suspect that's true for other towns as well. So I really thank you all for your vision and efforts on our behalf. I look forward to it being brought to a public hearing and enacted as soon as possible. That said, I too want to express some concerns about it. My top concern really has to do with the threshold that Joe Wilson just spoke of the 1,000 truck trips. And I come to these concerns in part through my own common sense, but also my involvement with one of the groups out in Caroline called Rouse. I've been working to pull together a forum of first responders from Pennsylvania to come up and let our first responders know what they're in for. And, you know, I expected to hear lots about blowouts and hazmat and all that, and they said, the biggest issue we're dealing with is road issues. That we're dealing with 50% increase in motor vehicle accidents, traffic that makes it impossible for them, well, I shouldn't say impossible, but has lengthened their response time to incidents by something that used to take 5 to 7 minutes now takes 20 to 30 minutes. Their own personal travel, one of the fire chiefs was telling me to go from his home to the store. He now has to go either before 7 in the morning or after 8 at night because otherwise it just takes 45 minutes to get there, whereas it used to take 10. The kinds of traffic that we're in for, I think we can't even begin to imagine. I, too, have seen the leaked DOT document, and I also presume that you have. One of the things that struck me in that document, and this goes to the issue of the threshold, is that I fear that the current threshold comes dangerously close to exempting some heavy industry projects from needing permits. The DOT document indicates that in addition to heavy truck traffic, each job results in significant associated traffic of workers and other adjunct activities that with multiple jobs could result in the realm of tens of thousands, and they actually said 35 to 45,000 additional trips per day of smaller motor vehicles of people associated with these jobs that are back and forth. And this, too, causes added wear and tear on the roads. Motor vehicle accidents increase, disabled vehicles along the road, doubling in traffic on one lane while the other lane is closed for the entry, increased traffic. Construction also results in shifting of loads from one place to another. And all in all, I'm concerned that this threshold of 1,000 is going to be too high of a threshold, and that overall things will be permitted that we don't want to see, and that we won't have the protection that we want. I'll end with this sort of common sense dictum that I know I've been cautioned that when you're building a house, you expect it to take twice as long and cost twice as much. And I urge the county to use the same kind of common sense fudge factor when planning to protect our roads. I think there's just a lot we don't know how to account for, and the threshold is certainly one area where we can take precautions. Thanks.
Thank you, Irene. She was the last person signed up. We have somebody else. Okay, Mike, you want to just read the name? Okay. Well, whoever it was, just go ahead to the
Kirby
microphone.
Adams.
Kirby.
Yeah, I'm just going to finish reading this statement that Pastor Benson started. The last paragraph reads, "We recognize that neither Common Council nor the legislature has the authority to override Cornell's decisions regarding this matter. Irrespective of whether Cornell reopens their decision to move Africana to the College of Arts and Sciences, we see your failure to approve this resolution as another example of how institutional racism operates. In spite of all the rhetoric of our public officials championing equity, diversity, and the value of inclusive processes, where decisions are made with the input of those who will be most affected, we're sorry to note that the walk of some of your members does not match your talk. We find it difficult to believe that they're acting in ignorance, and we see voting down this resolution as an intentional act to preserve a status quo in which making decisions that disregard or marginalize the interests of people of color is commonplace." That's signed Pastor Ronald Benson, Laura Branca, Travis Brooks, Kirby Edmonds, Audrey Cooper, Marcia Fort, Carl Graham, Sarah Reistetter, Jamila Sequeira, Reverend Nathaniel Wright, Katrina Baxter, and you'll all have copies. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyone else?
One more from Jeff Berman.
Okay.
Thanks. I just wanted to indicate that there is some others of us who are here who support this letter. I want to talk about Africana for a minute because I got very involved in it when I did hear about Cornell's decision. We sent a letter, many of the people signed it here, to the president of Cornell and the provost, simply requesting a dialogue with the community. They said they weren't really interested in coming because we wanted to have an open community forum of which we were going to take responsibility for organizing it, bringing it down, setting it up, getting the word out so that the public could hear both sides of the issue at the same time. They continually didn't want to do that. They then said they would come down for 50 minutes. But if we brought anybody who spoke from the other side, they didn't want to show up. They did not want to have this dialogue. The requests were always the same as in this letter, just to bring people down here so there could be open discussion about the movement of Africana to the arts and sciences. That didn't happen. It still hasn't happened. Some of us recently wrote people at Cornell to ask them how they were going to honor Dr. Turner. We all got the same response. Nothing more is going to happen. How many of you attended the honoring of Dr. Turner, one of the great civil rights leaders in our community? Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address the legislature? All right. Thank you all very much. I don't see any municipal officials there. Anyone here from a municipal body? All right. Legislator privilege of the floor. Nathan?
I wanted to say that I was a supporter of the Africana resolution and also authored the GIAC board letter in support of the Africana Center. And I do regret the decision that was made here at the county legislature meeting. I hope that in the future that when we're working with Cornell, that and we have some more specific demands, I have no problem, and I'm sure many of my colleagues have no problem bringing a resolution forth again to ask for those demands and that they be brought forth. And I hope that we bring it through the committee structure, we have a dialogue about it, and we push it forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Anyone else? Leslin, then Frank.
I'm going to start with just thanking the folks who are there, the community leaders of color and allies who are here and read this well-crafted letter. For me, it's a great feeling to look out and see you all out there. It's not often that there are people out there who support the work I do being here, so it's good to look out and see you, and it's good to know that you have taken the actions that we took to heart and felt the need and did act on coming and expressing your concerns to the legislature. So thank you very much. I really do hope that there'll still be some dialogue. I really hope, decision or not, it's room for clearing the air, and there's room for making people feel as if they're part of a decision as opposed to something being handed down on them, especially people who already feel some sense of being disenfranchised. So thank you all. On another note, it's National Night Out. We are always here at National Night Out. Oh, were you going to talk about that?
No.
Oh, okay, good. Crime prevention, or encouraging our neighbors to meet each other, greet each other, know each other, and as a way of really trying to help prevent crime in our neighborhoods. So if we get out early enough, I know Martha said executive session, there's one happening at Titus Towers, every year there is, and on the north side of Conway Park, every year there is. So really great event, and we want to encourage more National Night Out, even beyond the celebratory day, that people can really begin to take care of each other again. But thank you.
Thank you, Leslin. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
There's no fees.
I have a couple of items I wanted to bring to your attention. First, Saturday, you may recall at the last meeting I reminded you that Saturday would be the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new cemetery at Sampson State Park. I had the distinct pleasure of serving on Mike Nozzolio, Senator Nozzolio's committee to help bring that forward, and I want to remind this board that you folks had quite a hand in this some years ago. And I know I've said this before, but I think Dick Booth ought to be thanked in absentia for his help in bringing this forward. We were told there were over 1,000 people in attendance. You could see them all, many in uniform. There will be over 200 acres is set aside for the development. If you have an opportunity, it's right on Seneca Lake. It's an absolutely beautiful spot. And it's next to the, one side is the state park. The other side is a Department of Environmental Conservation preserve. So it's really a very, very nice location. And if you have an opportunity to get up there, it's going to be, I hate to put it this way, but it'll be well used because spaces are running out all over the country and in our state. Secondly, this is another reminder. Thursday, the 4th, is the TCAT budget presentation at the library. If you haven't already responded to Sarah Persons at TCAT, If you can't come, would you also send that kind of a response? They're trying to get a head count for lunch and also number of packets to develop. If you had a chance to review today's Ithaca Journal, you noticed that the DEC and the SDGEIS has not formally been extended. They're still reviewing it, and the actual comment period has not officially begun. However, I wanted to report to you that the Water Resources Council, you may recall, we formed a special committee. Carol described it at a former meeting. That committee is moving forward with its review regardless, because what we have to work with is sufficient to address some of the comments that we had on the council. Somebody else, I'm sure, through planning or whatever, will probably keep you folks abreast of how that's going. Carol may be the right one to talk about that. Last item, Martha. Next Thursday, on the 11th, the Empire Farm Days is going to take place. And as a reminder, I serve as on a special governor-appointed commission and I'm representing agriculture on that in that body. We're having the meeting, the second official meeting up here. But we've been to Albany twice. I feel like Martha running back and forth to Albany. But the piece that I've been concentrating on, it's no surprise, is equine. But we want to elevate the status of agriculture in the state to make people aware of the economic contribution that it makes and the myriad of services it provides. If you have any comments or questions that you'd like me to bring before the official meeting next Thursday, I'd appreciate it if you could get back to me with those. We're going to be issuing a second draft of the material that we presented to the governor a year or so ago, and this will be an update. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Carol and Pat?
Yeah. Although many of them have left, I also wanted to thank all of the people who came out tonight to speak to us about three different issues. I particularly appreciate the opportunity to hear people on issues that aren't necessarily coming to us that night for a final decision. I think it's really important, and I hope that as we talk to our constituents and they have concerns, particularly as budget season comes, that we encourage them to come in advance so that the kinds of things they're telling us are things that we can work in as we're first formulating our plan of action before it's coming that night for a decision. In particular, on the road preservation, I think we have a stage that we're engaged in tonight. If there are very, and we'll have a public hearing. We'll hear from people, I assume, at our next meeting as well. If there are very substantive changes, very extensive changes, we will need to probably talk about this more later and ask Jonathan to weigh in, but we may need to send it back to yet another public hearing. So hearing tonight from people, I think, will help us as we move that forward even to the hearing. And same thing on the building decisions we have to make and all of the other issues. So please, people should keep coming. On the gas drilling issue, I just want to let people know of a resource. There's continued community discussion by various groups. As Frank talked about, the Water Resources Council has been really out in the fore with a process to break up the document and figure out their comments. Some of our other groups in town are doing that, both our official advisory bodies and others. TCOG, Gas Drilling Task Force, has its website with a lot of resources on it about the various committees that you can feel free to go look at. There was a very interesting community forum put on July 25th with resources available on the web. The
the site I will give you, and a place, I believe there is now a repository for comments. So as you see well-written comments and reaction to the DSGEIS that you think others ought to see, the website I'm going to give you will give you instructions about how to find that and where to do that, and that is the tcgasmap.org website. You'll find there links to the audio, and I don't know if it's the video yet, from that forum, the slides, well-done slides and reaction, some other information, the maps of where there are current leases, and then instructions about where they have ended up finding a site to post comments. That is tcgasmap, all one word, .org. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. The video from the July 4th forum is now on the TCOG, the Gas Drilling Task Force's website. So if people go to TCOG and go to the Gas Drilling Task Force, it's in seven different parts. You can pick the speaker that you want to listen to. So the video is right there. I had Pat, Nathan, then Brian.
Took me a few minutes here to kind of get my thoughts together to decide if I wanted to respond, and if so, how. But I'm sorry that the people that spoke about the Africana Center are not still here, and I apologize for not being ready to speak sooner. But I do feel compelled to just say a few words. I was one of the people who did not support the resolution when it came to the floor. And I've thought about it a lot since, and I have seriously asked myself, was that a mistake? Should I have voted for it? And what I have kind of come around to in my thinking is that I compare it to a couple of other situations that have come up for me since I've been on the legislature, as well as situations that occurred in previous elected office. And that's that... I'm thinking particularly of a situation recently that had to do with the workers' center, and an issue that the center was focusing on in terms of equity and the fair treatment of employees in a local business and so on. And at that time, I had fairly strong feelings about the issue that was going on. And as an individual, and not identifying myself as a legislator, I took it upon myself to find out by talking to people at the Workers' Center to learn about the issue, and then to go and personally speak to the owner of the business to let them know how I felt about it. I think that kind of advocacy in this kind of a situation is, it feels appropriate to me. However, just as the legislature does not take a stand on those kinds of issues that are occurring in the community for what I think is a good reason, I think it would be inappropriate for us to do so as a legislature. It still continues to feel inappropriate for us to take a position on an issue that is at its core a conflict between, that's sort of an internal conflict with an institution here in the community. And as much as I might support one particular point of view or another point of view as an individual, I still remain convinced that it was not the right thing to do for us to take a position. And that's why I voted against it and why I would do so again. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. I've got Nathan, Brian, and Mike.
I just wanted to thank county administration for our retreat last week. I thought that even though it probably didn't give you any definitive answers, I found the discussion actually really helpful, and I think the dialogue was really healthy to get us in that budget mode mindset and understanding what we need to prioritize and prioritize more. So I just wanted to thank county administration for that meeting and for the results of that survey. Also, I wanted to let everybody know that I'm on call for the hospital as administrator, so I will be, and we are currently at capacity, so I am going to be probably called every 10 to 15 minutes, and I really apologize because I will have to go off to the back and address those calls. So thanks.
Okay, thanks, Nathan. Brian.
A couple of thank yous. Unlike Frank, I'm going to limit it to two instead of four or five. Leslin, thanks for mentioning National Night Out. It's a very important event. There's actually another one tonight in Newfield. The thing that we have to remember is this is a night of celebration and a reminder for crime prevention and so forth, but there's a lot of other days throughout the year that everyone has to be aware of that. And kind of on the same note, although it's not related to crime, we've had a lot of discussions lately about COFA and elderly folks and stuff like that, and we're right in the middle of the dog days of summer, and there's a lot of elderly folks out there that may live alone or, I guess this is more for folks out in the public. Just stop in and check on it. That's a sort of prevention itself. And the other thank you I want to give out is to Mike for organizing the informal Tompkins-Cortland legislators luncheon and meeting. I found that to be very, very interesting and conversation. He's going to speak to it, I'm sure, but we hope to have several more. I know it's important for me in my district as, it's very, very close. As a matter of fact, it's closer than our county seat to most of my constituents. So thanks to Mike on that.
Thank you, Brian. Kathy. I'm sorry, Mike and then Kathy.
I was going to report on that when I got to government operations. But what I'd like to report on right now is a meeting that was held last night in Varna. In the town of Dryden, and our chair Martha Robertson and I, we are two of the representatives of Dryden, have most of the town, and we held one of the budget community meetings, the second one. Of course, Pat had the first one, and we had about 15 members of the public come. It was a nice session. I want to thank Joe Mariana, and I want to thank Marsha Lynch. And also Kevin helped me out with some facts and figures earlier. We were able to present what I think pretty unbiased view of what the budget process is going to be for us, what factors are driving the costs of real property taxes, the potential massive budget cuts that we may have to look at. And we were able to dialogue with the people who came. It was very cordial. I think most of them were very interested. Some had some thoughts for us. They wanted us to remember that it's not only the increase in the county taxes, it's in the increase in all of the taxes that we have to be thinking about. Some folks wondered about our payroll. Basically, and what we're doing about that, and how the pension works. If we couldn't have something like a 401k instead of a defined benefit plan that we have, and we tried to explain the parameters of state law and the Constitution and how we are often required to abide by those, even if we'd like to try something different. Martha, you may want to mention it too, but I really think it was a good thing. I know others here are having these kind of community meetings in their districts later on. And the more people we can get to come to these from the public, the better educated both they are and we are.
Thank you, Mike. Kathy and then Jim.
Thank you. In listening to the people from the public talking about roads preservation tonight, I was struck after the national discussion with regard to the budget about how we're kind of behind, not just nationally, but here in Tompkins County, and that we're not really yet talking about jobs preservation, especially with regard to the possibility of fracking coming to our area. It's something that many of us in the construction industry think about and talk about a lot, And it's something that I think that all of us here in Tompkins County, and particularly legislators, should approach with as much passion and as much concern as we've approached the roads and water issues. There's some real hurting going on, and the possibility of fracking coming to our region can devastate further our local economy. And there's a number of approaches to this. Nathan brought in an expert. Well, maybe it wasn't just Nathan, but we've had experts talk to us about some of the side issues that can come with that kind of industrial fracking. And I don't think it's an idle fear, because many of the construction people that I've talked to from Texas and from other places where natural gas drilling and fracking have taken place have told me the toll it takes on a community's economy when low-wage workers are brought in to do construction, to do work on rigs, or come in to do all kinds of work, and they drive down the local wages, the local working conditions, and basically turn a community into, well, in our case, it would become a tourist trap with polluted waterfalls, at least in my opinion. So I would like to alert everyone to that and say this road preservation resolution that we're passing and the legislation that we want to implement is very good and very important. And now I would like for us to turn all our energies to jobs preservation, and not just for Tompkins County. I think we need to work together. Martha and President Scorton are on a big group that's talking region-wide, talking statewide about important economic development issues, and I believe that jobs preservation, particularly as regards the problems that come with fracking, should be at the top of our list. And if we want to preserve these jobs, we need to think about what sort of, I won't use the word limitations, but I'd like for us to think about our community values and to think about what our preferences are and try and find ways to encourage those preferences. It's past time to think about that. Another thing I'd like to say is how pleased I was to see members of the community, leaders of color and allies at the meeting tonight. And I know well what it's like to have the courage to stand up and talk and confront an intransigent majority that has no interest in mediation, that has no interest in reconciliation, and still keep on fighting and keep on confronting because it's the right thing to do. And I think that the community of color in this region, and particularly in Ithaca and Tompkins County, has shown a tremendous amount of thoughtfulness and restraint and also patience with the now majority, and I would really like to see my colleagues on the legislature show the kind of leadership that these leaders have shown in their willingness to ask for mediation and their willingness to ask for thoughtful, open, transparent dialogue about these issues that actually affect every one of us. But what they're asking for is not a dialogue on the terms of the majority. They want an equal dialogue. And these issues of equality that we all say we care so much about need to be acted on and not just spoken about. I want to say that I missed the meeting at which the vote was taken. I did my math and noticed that my vote wouldn't have made a difference, but I have written President Scorton, Provost Fuchs, and numerous other people at Cornell. As a Cornell employee, some might say this is taking a risk. Those kinds of risks are small in comparison with the risk of losing our democracy. And every little step, every time we're silent, every time we are afraid that by confronting we'll be seen as less effective or less thoughtful, we lose ourselves. So I'll just say right now, I thought it went through the committee process, actually, Nathan, because it went through the WDIC, as I understand it. And I think that for those that would be willing to listen and reconsider, I think it would be an important exercise, not just symbolic, not just a gesture, but actual action to show that, Yeah, there's some equality here. Yeah, we're willing to suggest that equal footing is something that should happen, especially given not just the notion, but the reality that the community of color is likely to be in the majority, not just here in Tompkins County, but across the country in a very short time. So it's time that we start recognizing that mediation, reconciliation, and transparent discussion is going to be a requirement. And it's something that I would like to see this body vote to ask Cornell to reconsider with the Africana Center. And I would certainly vote to support it, just as I've done my online activism. But here, I can make a difference, and so can y'all. So that's a second thing. I think this segues well into COFA, because people came tonight to speak about COFA, to speak about the need for a visible and accessible and centrally located place that has synergy with other county departments. And these are not people that, how can I say this, these are members of our community. These are people that want to retire here. They made good points about our economic development, about the interests of a lot of alums and people who come here to visit and who want to stay for a lifetime, and the message that we're sending them if we relegate COFA to Brown Road. Yes, I'm talking about this under privilege of the floor, because the fact remains that as this population grows, and yes, I'm one of these people, we're going to have needs, and it's a short-sighted decision to consider moving COFA away from the proposed location at the Human Services Annex or the Carpet Bazaar. And I'd like to have, and I'm just saying this right now on the floor, a discussion of that location and whatever happened to it, because I feel that many people in the public have asked me, what's going on? How did that happen? There's these meetings that happen that aren't necessarily documented that well. Carol, you'll like that. And that the public isn't really aware of what happened. How did the switch get made? So the segue to my last topic of the night is, as people get older, yes, as was mentioned by many of our speakers, we die. And one of the things that's coming up that I'm honored to take part in, and that I would ask everybody to find ways to support, whether it's by being a boater or by going to cheer people on or finding someone that you know on the womenswimming.org website and donating to support them. This is a tremendous fundraiser for HospiCare, our palliative care services nonprofit here in Tompkins County. August 13th, real soon, is the event, and it's really important. And that's my plug for it. Yes, I participate in it, but I bet everybody here knows four or five women or men that are boaters and women that are boaters or swimmers. And this is important to our community. Why? Because we have lots of people here, and a lot of older people tend to need the care that HospiCare provides. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kathy. Jim, Nathan, and...
I will give my time to Nate. My announcement will fit nicely under the budget.
Okay. Nathan, Leslie, Dooley, Pam.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that because I work in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, I've actually gotten to know a lot of municipal officials in that area. And actually, there are some that are interested in speaking and talking about some of those local costs that you were talking about, Kathy, job preservation. But also, a big thing is housing, too. The housing market has really changed there. And, of course, public safety, as we've talked about before. And one story that actually I've heard now from multiple people, so I don't think it's just an anecdote, is that the gas companies are for people that have houses for rent. They are now offering people $1,000 per room without utilities or anything like that, but just $1,000 per room in a house. So a four-bedroom house, $4,000 a month. And it's and in a place where rents, one-bedroom apartments usually are around $450 to $600 a month, it's pretty substantial. And it means that a lot of people are actually getting kicked out of their rental units and having a really hard time finding housing. So a lot of the people that work in my hospital, they are actually having to move out more towards the country where there's less public transportation. It's harder to get to work. And there's more cost for them, too. So it's a real there's definitely a lot of aspects, Kathy, as you're talking about, that need to be discussed even more.
Okay, Leslie Dooley.
Pam, maybe I should talk to you about it, because some of it's like PDEQ kind of stuff. Maybe I could touch base with you about having one of those individuals, you know, talk.
That'd be great.
They're from like Sayre Borough and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Leslyn Dooley, Pam Carroll, and I'm going to jump in myself. Leslyn.
Kathy, thank you for your comments. We'll poke fun to people who spoke as well. I do echo much of what you said. But what I really wanted to mention is, you know, our youth in our community always, you know, complaining about not having much to do, what else is there. This time around, they have created their own festival, downtown Ithaca, the Banana Festival. I have to mention the Banana Festival. It is happening on the 13th, Saturday the 13th. From noon to 5. Don't ask me anything about it, except it's a banana festival. If you've gone to the Apple Harvest Festival, imagine it is going to be bananas everywhere. You know, banana pie, banana, you know, you name it, it'll be there. But I'm so proud of the young people from the Youth Bureau in conceptualizing it and making it happen. So come out to the Banana Festival on Saturday the 13th.
Well, that explains the email I got that it didn't open
yet.
Okay,
gold bananas? You. Did you get a gold bananas email?
I just saw the title. Like, okay, so I'll open it. Okay. Dooley.
Food sounds good. I wanted to comment.
I agree.
Inspired by listening to all of these comments. I voted no on the resolution that was drafted dealing with Cornell and the Africana Center. Initially, I was so turned off by the rhetoric in the proposed resolution, which I thought overstated things, a couple of things I knew not to be accurate. If all that we had been asked was to lend our weight to ask Cornell to have an open dialogue with the community about the subject, that would have been one thing, but that's not what the resolution read like. So I had no choice but to vote no on that resolution. With respect to job creation, that is terribly important, and it's come up more than once tonight, I'm sure we will do what we can locally, but to the extent that government has to cut its budget, it means cutting jobs. And the agreement that was just reached in Washington over the debt ceiling is a disaster in that respect. It will reduce the amount of money government spends, which will make unemployment higher, which is why I believe the markets will not respond favorably to this deal, and we will see our recession increase, not decrease. So this is just a very bad time for not just the county, but the country.
Thank you, Dooley. Pam.
Yes, I apologize for being late, and I'm very sorry that I missed the public comment period. Clearly there were some important things that were brought forward to us. I was at the National Night Out at Titus Towers, and I stopped in there, and one of the things that, it's just a wonderful event over there. They are sitting outside having hamburgers and hot dogs, and it was a band that was just getting warmed up to play, and that goes on until 8 o'clock. So if anybody out there wants to go over, it's really a delightful spot where they have it, and there are lots of people having a great time. But I did want to say that in my conversations with people, one of the things that came up when I told them that I was on the county legislature was their concern about COFA and about moving COFA out of the city. It was pretty clear that people felt very strongly about the need to have it downtown. And one of the things that it seems it would be important for us to have, which I haven't seen, and perhaps they have been gathered, but I just haven't seen them, is the numbers in terms of who uses the services of COFA and where they live in the county. But in any case, I think that having it in the center of the in the county seat, where transportation is the most available for people, makes a tremendous amount of sense. But I just wanted to let you know that just in my conversations with people over there, there were some very heartfelt comments about the possibility of COFA moving outside the city.
Thank you, Pam. Carol?
Yeah, I just wanted to give people a little more information since it's come up a couple of times about the socioeconomic portion of the gas drilling studies that is
that the New York State has added a whole section that was slated to come out by now. A surprise. They have discovered that is all of socioeconomic impact is a slightly bigger topic than they had anticipated. I have personally heard one of the assistant secretaries in the governor's office and one of the chief spokespeople for the DEC credit, some of us from Tompkins County here, were pushing them with others across the state, but really having a loud voice pushing them to add that study. So I think that we should watch for it. There's currently no specific group as part of the TCOG gas drilling task force putting together our response and sort of a listing of issues, asking our various departments, both countywide and in our towns, to put in one spot the concerns that are related to that fall under the rubric of socioeconomic. It could really use a chair. It's so easy to pull together. You pull together a few people who are in the field. They start asking questions, and it becomes very clear where it would go. I was hoping to be able to do it as we branched off from the assessment and land valuation issues, because these socioeconomic questions started to come up. And I thought we'd have the assessment database issues sewn up in appraisal very quickly, and that has mushroomed, as some of you know, with the implications there on mortgages and economic implications there. Other issues related to that have to do with the impact on families, housing, our hotel occupancy tax. Is not imposed if people are renting hotel rooms for more than 30 days at a time. The jobs issues, we see data coming out from Susan Christofferson at Cornell, studying what happened in Pennsylvania. One small statistic on that one, the kinds of things you could pull together if we had one chair. It's more powerful if it is an elected official, but really anybody could step up and help pull that together in a few sessions. One statistic as an example, the industry predicted hundreds of thousands of jobs per year in Pennsylvania. 2010, Pennsylvania Department of Labor statistics claimed 41,000 hires. That turns out to be mostly very temporary, you know, few day to few week jobs that end. Their own statistics in terms of jobs, permanent full-time jobs created, are 9,600 in 2010, of which 30% documented have gone to people with out-of-state addresses. So we're now down to about 6,000 jobs for 2010. These are basic numbers, and it really would help New York State. Implications for families, human services. Frank, your committee might want to send people or find somebody who might head this effort. I have a 35-point listing to get you started if you'd like. And so please, if anybody would like to step up, Liz Thomas, heads the TCOG gas drilling task force. You could talk to her. You could talk to me about it, Martha.
Carol, what was that number? It was 9,600?
9,600 actual jobs created in all of Pennsylvania in 2010.
And they had projected 100?
Well, the industry had given general figures of hundreds of thousands of jobs per year that would be created.
And of the 9,600, 30% went to people with out-of-state addresses.
And they didn't know about the others.
Okay. Okay, I need to respond to a couple of things because after, you know, when I get to my report, everybody will forget what happened before. I will mention that I was in my report, I will talk about the Economic Development Council, and I did raise fracking as an issue there. I was already asked to fill out a survey about my concerns on, you know, related to economic development for our region. And especially because
A couple of the members already were quoted in the papers saying that, that fracking is, you know, so important to the region, and we have to address that. And yet the journal didn't call anybody who might have an alternate point of view. So I did make sure to put that in the as a concern that that fracking could crowd out the rest of our economy, and it was just a boom-bust kind of issue and actually create more problems than it might conceivably solve. On the Africana letter, I, along with several others, I think, signed the letter as an individual that, that was mentioned in the public comment. I thought that was appropriate, and I appreciate everybody's strong feelings about that issue, but I felt it was appropriate to sign it as an individual. And Frank, the TCAT packets, you know, if whoever's making the packets, make 15 and we'll bring back the numbers that for anybody who doesn't come. So they shouldn't worry about just making a packet for whoever comes on Thursday.
I suspect Joe's going to be there and maybe Kevin. So we'll have enough.
Well, but to bring them back. So, okay. All right. Thank you all for this very interesting conversation. And now I would like to welcome Aaron Risto of the Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District. And Aaron, I think you're just moral support here. It's Aaron's presentation. Okay. Great. Okay, we think we have. Thank you for coming. We think we did it. That was why Kevin was running around here in his shorts and red T-shirt. Green light on time.
Details.
And Aaron, if you can use the microphone there to your left. Thanks, Karen.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time today. I work as a Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District employee here in Ithaca, but I also am the ag coordinator for the Upper Susquehanna Coalition. With my job, I work very closely with the DEC, the EPA, Cornell, Ag and Markets, and other agencies, NRCS, that are related to soil and water conservation, not only in this county, but 16 other counties. My purpose here today, I really have two. The first one is just to update you on the TMDL situation that Tompkins County is experiencing, but also basically the southern tier of the state. And I also just want to give you a little perspective, because there may be a time that comes in the future where citizens of Tompkins County will need your support. So just to remind everyone who not familiar with the Upper Susquehanna Coalition, it's 16 counties in New York and 3 in Pennsylvania that make up the headwaters to the Chesapeake Bay. And we, like I said before, we partnership with a lot of other conservation agencies in the state. Specifically for Tompkins County, there's a map of the county down there, and you can see it's really the southern portion of the county that drains to the Chesapeake Bay. So Newfield, Danby, Caroline, and a little bit of Dryden drain there. So, you know, there's only a handful of farms in that region, and most of them are small farms. And there's not really any wastewater treatment plants in there. But just keep in mind that this is still an important issue to Tompkins County, because in the future, this rest of this county could be under a TMDL. And so just keep that in mind. So this issue may not be as major as it is in other counties in this area, like Cortland and Tioga to the south, but it could, it still has an impact here, but it will definitely has ramifications for the future. I just want to briefly mention what a TMDL is. It's not too many darn lawyers. It's basically, it's total maximum daily loads. For the Chesapeake Bay, the TMDL is for nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment. And this basically sets a daily limit or a pollution diet that New York State has it's on a yearly basis. It says daily limits, but it's reported in a yearly basis. And it uses a model to estimate sources of sewage, so wastewater treatment plants, urban runoff, farms, forests, septic, and it assigns reduction goals or targets for each jurisdiction. So there's six states and Washington, D.C. that participate in this. This is where it starts to get a little nerdy, but basically the model just came out with, the EPA released new numbers yesterday, so these are fresh numbers that we need to base our watershed implementation plan on. You can see that our baseline is from 2009, and the model is predicting that we are at 10.7 million pounds of nitrogen per year. I'm barely going to talk about any of this, but I'm only going to mention nitrogen because phosphorus and sediment aren't as much of a challenge for us as it is nitrogen. So the planning target that we have which is 2025, is 8.35. So that's a 22% reduction from now, well, basically, sorry, from 2009 until 2025. The other important number there is that 9.3, because we need to get 60% of the way to the 2025 planning target by 2017. And that our progress rent for 2010, because we're still in 2011, shows us at 10.0. So we're actually almost halfway to our goal for 2017, which is some good news and is a testament to what New York is already doing is working to help keep the water clean. And that's just the next point that I want to make here. Really the important graph is the one to the left, because that's the nitrogen. You can see there's a bunch of bars up there. The one to the left, the red one to the far left, is New York. And that is USGS gauging station data for total nitrogen as it passes a gauging station in Towanda, Pennsylvania, which is what that picture over there to the right represents. Though that's not the actual gauging station, but that's showing where the two, the Chemung and the Susquehanna rivers meet. It's just south of that point. That's the only point that the EPA uses to measure our water quality. And at that point, it is clean. It's at 1.1 milligrams per liter. That red bar there is an EPA equation that determines high aquatic, it sets the standard for high aquatic life required by the TMDL. So you can see New York is already at that mark. So we are already contributing clean water to the bay, and we meet the TMDL requirement.
Sorry, Aaron, could you explain what are the bars going across?
Those other bars are just other watersheds or other stations throughout the watershed. So not in New York State, but other states. So there's Pennsylvania's up there, Maryland. And those are just representing, you know, other states aren't meeting that standard, and they're contributing to the bay.
What are those two big ones?
I'd have to read it here. They're in Maryland. The purple one is in Maryland, and the taller one is also in Maryland. Maryland has, you know, it's right next to the bay, obviously, and it has, it's been doing this Chesapeake Bay program for 25 years or more. They have more gauging stations, they have more infrastructure, more data than New York, because we're relatively new to this process. And those are just other gauging stations. It's just showing their contributions as well, and, you know, showing New York is meeting that standard. I'm happy to answer more questions about it. Yeah.
I'm a little confused because the Chesapeake Bay, it all flows through Maryland and goes into the ocean there, right?
It flows, so, it's in Maryland.
So that's, those bars measure everybody else's nitrogen.
Measuring streams in Maryland that contribute to the bay.
Okay.
So, and, you know, the Susquehanna River enters at the very top of the bay, and then that water travels through the bay on its way out to the ocean. And the other Maryland states have lots of small streams that run to the bay. Some of it does run directly to the bay, but some of it travels through river systems before it gets there. And travels through farmland and obviously heavily populated. You know, I could spend a lot of time here on all the details. I'm just trying to give you the highlights, if you will, because of time, and I do appreciate everyone's time. But I could certainly do a lot of explaining. There's thousands of pages of documentation for this, so I'm just trying to give you the highlights, and I'm actually close to finishing here. I want to put this quote up just to show you that the EPA has now recognized New York's clean water. This is the EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson just about 3 weeks ago, and she says here, this is a part of her quote. She was actually responding to Jim Tierney, the DEC. He's with the DEC. I forget his title. But he says, it is an understanding that it is true if we could somehow take the water and transport it to the bay, we might have a healthier bay. And there is documentation that's going to be released from the EPA that acknowledges New York's contribution of clean water to the bay. So, you know, keep in mind, some of you might be thinking that, you know, there are local water quality issues that we all have in New York. I'm just talking about the Chesapeake Bay portion that drains south from this county. And, you know, there's certainly local issues, but as it passes that gauging station, as it leaves New York, it's clean water, and it's been acknowledged by the EPA. And so this is my last slide. And so basically I wanted to update you all where we're at with that. Certainly those numbers are challenging. To reduce clean water, essentially 22%, to make something clean 22% cleaner is not easy to do, especially when you think about this region is heavily forested. It's as a watershed in total, it's about 70% forested. You can't really do anything to make that cleaner. So a lot of this is going to have to come out of ag, and a lot of it will have to come out of wastewater treatment plants. And that's going to be very, very challenging because our approach is already working that we have. And really that 1.1 milligrams per liter is approaching pristine levels as it would be if it was the region was all forested with no people. The DEC is now, those numbers that I showed you there just came out yesterday. We have a watershed implementation plan that does not get us to that number. It gets us about 500,000 pounds higher over the next 15 years. And so now the DEC is contemplating what they should do for their next steps. And one of those options is actually a lawsuit. So the DEC is seriously considering that. And it's important to remember here for you that they are doing this with the Great Lakes as well. They're not as far along in the process, but there is certainly a time in the near future where the entire Tompkins County could be under the TMDL. These measures that they want us to do really are very, very costly, especially for wastewater treatment plants. You know, they have several billion dollars estimated to clean up or for upgrades to the wastewater treatment plants for the New York part alone. And as I said, that might not necessarily affect Tompkins directly now, but the ramifications are down the road. So what we're basically going for here is that, you know, we support the Federal Clean Water Act and the TMDL approach for cleaning polluted water bodies. We agree with the EPA that New York's nutrient and sediment levels are below the Chesapeake Bay TMDL threshold, and therefore New York is already meeting the clean water standards set for the Chesapeake Bay. So we want to continue to be a partner. We are happy to participate in the planning process. and reporting. We have to report our BMP implementation and our progress towards those goals, and we're happy to do that. And following their guidelines and be a partner and a player in the whole process. We're not trying to get out of any of that, but what we're asking for is a voluntary approach, since we do not have any impaired water bodies that contribute to the bay in New York, that all this process should be voluntary, because to go into the backstop measures that the EPA are asking could be costly. And so, like I said, I just wanted to give you guys an update, for one, let you know that we're here as a resource if you do have questions about this as it comes up. And perhaps as the DEC takes up their fight with the EPA, they may need some support from local counties as well. And so I may be asking for some support in the future. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Aaron. Julie, and then Pat.
What is the covered up word at the bottom right?
That there are no consequences, and the consequences basically mean they're backstop measures, which take wastewater treatment plants down to extremely low levels that really aren't even necessarily possible with the technology for New York because of the climate. And then there's also lots of backstops for agriculture as well.
So you only showed us the new numbers for nitrogen for New York's contribution.
Right.
But you up there, it also says that New York meets the sediment and phosphorus. Is that what you mean by nutrients?
They do meet the nutrient, phosphorus and nitrogen and sediment.
So your plea is that since we already meet the current targets,
well, we don't
shouldn't have to have lower targets in the future. Is that roughly it?
No, it's okay. It's very confusing, and I tried to get my message better because I keep getting less and less time to explain it, which is totally understandable. Everyone's busy, but a TMDL is a pollution diet, and then they have a model that determines what those levels should be. We have a plan that then they put in the model. That is basically a what-if scenario. What if we did all these things? Where would we be? And that gives us a number. We decided to do a plan that was realistic with the amount of money that we projected we would have over the next 15 years and staff and all that available. And that didn't get us to their target. They have that target is set very low. But essentially what that line is showing is that we already have our water is already clean. We're contributing to the problem. No one's denying that there's a problem, but New York isn't contributing to the problem. In fact, we're diluting their water to make it cleaner. And so we shouldn't face the heavy regulations that the EPA is threatening. We're willing to play their game and everything that they're asking, but they have very costly mandates that would put farms out of business and increase the cost to taxpayers for wastewater treatment upgrades.
Okay. Pat, then Peter, then Frank.
I was going to ask about the covered up words, too.
Peter?
Yeah, I've heard this before, and I have a hard time understanding it. For curiosity, who are the people that are responsible for it, and what is the source of the nitrogen pollution? Is it stormwater? Is it wastewater? What is it exactly? The big problem, the people that are generating the
well, for example, so you know, some of nitrogen and especially nitrogen, but if you're closest to the water body, your contribution is more direct, I guess. You know, nitrogen flows 500 miles down the Chesapeake or down the Susquehanna River to the Chesapeake Bay. Half of it is lost to the atmosphere. It denitrifies and some of it settles out. So from New York, only half of our nitrogen as it leaves makes it to the bay to begin with, just from natural processes. It's, you know, mineralized and all that. Maryland and Virginia especially have, you know, people have just poured in there for the last 25 years since the bay was identified as being impaired. they every 4 years, they add the equivalent to New York's population in the watershed. And they've been doing that since 1985. So you throw all those people in there. That, you know, it's very difficult to keep clean water. They also have a poultry industry down there that right next to the water table, so the, you know, that's right on the bay, so the water rises and it takes that nitrogen and brings it back down into the bay. So there's, but as far as sources, everything's a source. Even the forest contributes nitrogen to the system.
But
and the atmosphere.
You say that you know, since we're low, we shouldn't have to reduce it anymore. But at their high, because they got a lot of people living there. So how are they supposed to reduce theirs? Are they supposed to get the people out and transport them someplace else, or what? What?
Well, two things. I'm not saying we shouldn't reduce it anymore. We are working hard to reduce our nitrogen contribution. We're doing the best that we possibly can. They're asking us to go beyond what we can possibly do. But the other part is that is they have their own plan that they have to put together. And whether that's a realistic plan or not is, you know, for the EPA to decide. But they have costly, they have the same, you know, complaints in some ways as we do, only their water's impaired, our water isn't.
Thank you.
Frank and then Will, and then I'm, I have a question.
Thanks, Martha. First of all, Aaron has been at this, Pat and I serve on the Soil and Water Board. And I know Aaron has been at this for well over a year and a half, trying to get the word out. The problem has been that the EPA has not recognized that New York's contribution to the Chesapeake is clean. And when they originally came out with the parameters, they wanted us to go, New York, to go beyond what was probably possible to do. This doesn't just include farms, it includes woodlands, and as Aaron already mentioned, it includes wastewater treatment plants. And there was a, there's been a big concern about the restriction on economic development because of the impact. If you had to reduce what a wastewater treatment plant could take, the impact economically could be detrimental to the area that is served by that wastewater treatment plant. It's a rare instance when the DEC and a lot of the locals are in step, and the DEC felt that the EPA was really overstepping its bounds. And it's taken a lot of work. The Farm Bureau has been involved. Ag and Markets has been involved. There's a whole litany of initials that have been involved for the last 2 or 3 years now because they've wanted to reduce and change the mix, if you will. So coming to the numbers that you saw up there, and those are brand new numbers. Those are not the ones we saw at the Soil and Water Board about 2 weeks ago. Coming to that realization is really a pat on the back because for the EPA to recognize that through the DEC that New York's contribution has been very, very sensitive and very small is a major step in the right direction. The economic impact and the financial impact to meet what they had originally come out with would have been devastating. It would have been, if not impossible, near impossible to meet. So I don't think the plea tonight is as dramatic as it was 2 weeks ago when the Water Resources Council stepped up and did a letter to the EPA saying you have to back off a little. Basically, you got to back off a little bit on this. The model they came up with went overboard. So I appreciate, and I think Pat ought to be given some pat on the back for setting this up. The appreciate Aaron's coming tonight because this is a stay-tuned item, particularly for the four southernmost towns that contribute to the Chesapeake, because it's, to us, this is a major concern simply because the impact on agriculture could be severe, and some of us are hanging on by our fingernails in the southern part of the county with regard to agriculture. So the DEC ought to be complimented on this one as well.
But I think that's DEC, Cornell, Binghamton University, the Ag and Markets, you know, pretty much every institution in the state is all all agrees on this and is all on board, and now even the EPA is on board, really, with the fact that we have clean water.
Will?
I'm glad we have clean water. As it happens, I just got back from the Delmarva region where there was items in the news about the expanding historically large dead zone in the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
And the fact that there are two large trade groups basically pushing the idea of removing the control of the EPA and having it divert to states. And it's really not clear to me that that is a wise thing if we want to truly get that bay clean. I mean, the bay is of enormous importance to our economics, to our larger economics, and to the ecosystem. And you know, I'm glad that we have relatively clean water here. I don't pretend to understand the technical aspects of these regulations, but I am concerned about linking up with a larger effort to remove the authority from the EPA, because I think the problem they're facing is enormous and of critical importance.
I want to jump in here. I have a packet of information from Tom Santulli, the executive of Chemung County, asking us to weigh in on this, and I think what I'd like to do is perhaps forward this on to both the Ag and Farmland Board and the EMC, and see if each of those groups could make a recommendation or a comment or whatever, and have it come to PDEC. I mean, I don't think. I mean, we had a resolution here a couple of months ago, and it was the first time we'd heard about it, so we were completely unprepared to pass a resolution here. So I think if the two advisory boards could look at it and then come to PDEC, I think that would be helpful. But I have to ask you, Aaron, the numbers you gave, and I understand if these were just new, you said that the 2009 baseline, the improvement from 2009 to 2010 is already half of the distance we need to go to by 2017. So I understand the idea of low-hanging fruit, and that's, you know, so that the first improvement is the cheapest and easiest to achieve. But I guess I'm a little wondering a little if this is an overreaction, and if in fact we should just, there's time built into this program, if we should just take it seriously and do whatever we can, because somebody upstream from us is going to be polluting our water, and we would want them to pay attention as well. So, I mean, I don't know. Is this because these are brand new numbers that you're looking at?
No, it's you know, first of all, you know, we're upstream and we're contributing to clean water, but it's not really that 10 that I'm showing you, that's actually not an official number. That's more of personal communication that I've had with the modelers. Mm-hmm. But the point of me putting that number in there is to show that New York's approach is working. We don't need the EPA's heavy hand or threatened regulatory, because what New York is doing already works. We have a lot going for us. We have a huge land base for our farms. Maryland and Virginia and Delaware don't, so that makes it difficult for them. You know, so we have that. We have Cornell University is an advanced institution that gives recommendations that are beyond what other land-grant universities give their states. We have the AEM program in New York that's advanced over the other states in the area, so we get support that way. And, you know, the list goes on where we have basically our act together and are already doing a lot of the things right. Plus, we have a lot of land that helps us as well. So it's my point there is the EPA agrees our water's clean. And that, to me, shows that we already have the right approach.
Okay, well, I will, as I said, I will make copies of this and send it to the two bodies. We really have to move on, folks. This will come back to us if committees
is just a
talk about, really. We spent a half an hour on this already. I'm going to ask that we move on. I will just say that since I hope we can depend on the EPA on gas drilling, I'm not going to be contributing to a movement that wants the EPA to back off of something. So I will send this to the boards that are qualified to review it, and then we'll have a discussion at PDAC. And if there's something to do, we'll do it then.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much, Aaron. And thanks to Kevin. I don't know if he
came
in.
Yeah, thanks for setting this up.
From home to fix the... Okay.
If anybody has questions, they can always contact me. I'm in the office there.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. We appreciate your time. Briefly on my report, a couple of items. As I mentioned, the this Economic Development Council that the governor and lieutenant governor have appointed, the first meeting is Thursday. The local members are Michael Stamm and Catherine Bohr, who's dean of the Ag School, and David Scorton, who is chair, one of the co-chairs of the Southern Tiers Economic Development Council. In addition, Carolyn Peterson, a mayor of Ithaca, as her position as mayor and my position as chair of the legislature, are also ex officio members of the council, which means we can go and talk and, you know, participate, but just not vote. So we did, as I said, we had a meeting. We have a meeting scheduled for Thursday in Binghamton. At my request, I asked that the local people get together ahead of time and kind of hear each other's ideas. So, in fact, we're going to be meeting tomorrow. Steve Johnson in place of David Scorton, and I haven't heard back from Catherine Bohr yet, but Carolyn, Michael, and Steve and I will be meeting tomorrow. And I have some suggestions from a number of you. I asked for email comments from you, and I've incorporated those in the survey that I mentioned that I submitted today that they're using as preparation for Thursday's meeting. I wanted to mention that I met with Judge Mulvey last Thursday about our continuing space issues. It was a very good meeting. And I'm intending to memorialize our conversation in a letter. I'll finish that up tonight, and I'll be sending it to all of you tomorrow so that we can sort of make sure we understand each other and that's on the record. So you should expect that letter tomorrow by email. So, until that's sort of final and we hear back from him, I want to sort of reserve any further comment on it. And finally, I think you all have gotten at least one copy of the NYSAC program. I think I have three in the mail. The fall seminar for NYSAC, hotel deadline for reservation is August 19th. Karen's deadline for organizing us to go might be a little...
possibly a week before.
A week sooner than that. The dates are September 21st to 23rd in Lake Placid. And, I try to go whenever I can. It's very, very interesting, always a good program. So if you're interested in going for all or part of it, please let Karen know so we can sort out the expenses. We have a pretty small remaining budget, but we want to make the budget go as far as possible so that... people can participate if they're interested. So get in touch with Karen. So that is my report. If there are no questions, County Administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. Short one tonight. Just an update. I think it was two sessions ago that we red flagged some language in the so-called mandate relief bill that causes concern, because it looked as if the mandates that concern us the most were off limits with respect to suggesting changes for reform and having those suggestions considered by the Mandate Relief Commission. And there was some language that sure looked as if those issues were off limits, and that was a concern that was shared by NYSAC. We followed up. I think you're aware that we did send a letter to legislative leadership and anyone else we could think of in Albany that might listen to it, and enlisted Albany and enlisted NYSAC in trying to help us get an answer to the question. Jonathan and I were both on a webinar last week where NYSEC said they had tracked it down, they had talked to legislative leadership, and they were assured that these, that those mandates are not off limits with respect to suggested changes for reform. That the language that was in the legislation, according to legislative leadership, is rather boilerplate. So if there are recommendations for change or elimination or reform of the mandates that affect us the most, Medicaid, welfare, things like that, it is fair game, and those suggestions can be made and can be considered by the Mandate Relief Council. So we did red flag, and I wanted to pull down those red flags. It's an area where I think we've asked the question and gotten a satisfactory answer. The other note, very small note, just wanted to post to you, we had a county blood drive today. Pretty well advertised. We had 67 people respond to it. We pumped enough blood to affect 159 lives. The 67 people that came through the doors. So Jackie Kipla organized this on behalf of the county, and I wanted to thank her and all the county employees who volunteered both to staff that event and also to give toward the effort. So that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? I do want to ask, did the letter that Jonathan drafted, did that go to the Attorney General's office on the mandate issue?
Yes.
So belt and suspenders, let's see if he comes back with the same
answer.
The same answer. That'd be good to know. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I did put in everybody's folders the two pages from the draft supplemental generic environmental impact statement as it currently is called, or the most recent update. Those two pages are the pages which most directly affect county government. I gave out the first page, I believe, at F&I, but just to review what it says, because there's a lot of talk, but actually in the entire body of the thing, it doesn't say a whole lot, and maybe it will say more when the new part is released. It supposedly will. It has a short section on road use agreements. And it basically says they strongly encourage them for what that is worth. Then there's a section on what appears to be directed to local land use laws. I think they're probably thinking more in terms of zoning than road use laws. But what it basically says is that in the event either the company who's applying for the permit says that it is not in compliance with a local law, or the local jurisdiction, such as a village or town, says that the company is not in compliance with local law, there would be further review to determine whether there's any adverse environmental consequences from that noncompliance. And whether any further mitigating measures would be needed. So one would presume that companies applying for permits would be encouraged by that to at least work with municipalities so they wouldn't have to come back for more review. While what the more review is somewhat vague, I think companies would want to avoid any more review if possible. And then on the second page, it has a section about local health departments, which would obviously include the Tompkins County Health Department. And what it basically says is that the role of health departments would be to receive complaints from landowners who feel that their wells may have been contaminated as a result of fracking. And only after the health department would eliminate all other causes would it then be referred back to DEC. This is, of course, concern to the health department because there could be quite a few complaints by people who may think correctly or incorrectly that their wells are contaminated. And once you start testing wells, you never know what you'll find, regardless of fracking or not, but that's the experience. So it could impose possibly, you know, it's hard to tell yet, significant additional work for the county health department. Depending on just how much fracking there is and just how much, you know, how many people believe that there may have been an effect on their wells. But it could certainly be significant. So that's my report. I just kind of wanted people to know what it actually does say. And hopefully with the come up with this supplement, which keeps being delayed, but hopefully it will say something more. But that's my report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Will.
Jonathan, on that last measure, was there any discussion of creating an ability for health departments to get some financial support for that additional work?
No. I do know that both the state health department and the Association of County Health Departments have been trying to lobby DEC to provide some sort of financial support, either by making the company pay for it or some other method so that they're not out. But there's nothing in there now about that.
Okay. And is that something conceivably that could be done at the local level, at the county level, much as we are dealing with road preservation?
Well, I mean, not in terms of the cost. I mean, if the law requires them to go out and do whatever testing there is. Do you think we can charge the companies? It might be difficult in the sense that, let's say you are a landowner and you call and say that you think your well is contaminated. They go out and test and find no contamination. It might be hard to impose that cost, you know, as a local government. Or you find contamination and it's hard to necessarily relate it to that activity or not. So it's something one could look into, but it's not, you know, it's not clear. One could see companies having a good argument that they shouldn't have to pay for things if there's no law requiring them to do it and if they may not be related to their activities.
Carol and then Frank.
Yeah, on that question that Will just asked, I do think that now is the time to speak to your elected officials in Albany and the governor's office, maybe the Office of Real Property Tax Services or the DEC, on the ways in which, I think they're just beginning to look at the ways in which they will apportion any permitting fees and potential severance tax when they set it to local versus statewide costs related to this activity, or just throw it into the general pot at the state level. And that is all under discussion now, and once it comes to us, it's going to be harder to change. So, Martha, you've removed the phone numbers from the front of the lectern there.
No. They're by the mailboxes. I should know it by heart. They're by the mailboxes. Frank and then Peter.
Thanks, Martha. Jonathan, it's always difficult to know what they're going to be testing for. Did they define what they're constituting as contamination and what the array is that perhaps the test will include? Because it can be more than coliform. It can be 20 or 30 different trace elements, too.
Right. My understanding, this document does not. My understanding is that the state health department is supposed to come out with something with some standards. But as far as I know, they have not yet done so.
Because when we put our comments in 18 months ago, the comment that Will made about the financial concern was made, and by this county anyway, and it was made by not just the Board of Health, but this body, the Water Resources Council, and I think the EMC. And I don't know if you've had a chance to review it to see if it's even been addressed.
Yeah, no, I mean, those comments aren't addressed, at least in this part. At least with regard to financing and the specifics of what they're testing for.
Thanks.
Peter.
Jonathan, suppose I'm a gas company and I decide I want to make a well in the town of Ithaca, who has banned it. Now, how does this work? Does every gas company have to go to the DEC and get a permit for a particular well that they're going to drill in New York State? And if that answer is yes, then will the DEC say, no, you can't? I mean, they'll come and tell the DEC they're in violation of local law because local law in the town of Ithaca says you can't do any gas drilling at all. So exactly what's happened, I don't quite understand that.
Okay, well, I'll explain how it works, at least as contemplated by this. The initial question is whether companies, drilling companies, get a permit for every well. They need a permit for drilling activity, but a drilling activity could cover more than one well. So everything they do, they have a permit for, but it's not necessarily divided up by well. Okay. So assume for the sake of argument, like you say, a company wants to drill in the town of Ithaca, and it is local zoning does not permit it there or any place in the town of Ithaca. The company would, in theory, have to report that it is not in compliance with the local town law. The town would also have the right to notify DEC that it is not in compliance with town law. And as a result, DEC would require further information be submitted by the applicant to demonstrate that this noncompliance doesn't result in any additional adverse environmental impact, or that if it does, that appropriate mitigating measures are taken. Okay, that is quite aside from the point, okay, that is DEC's role, about whether, you know, of course the town would say, you know, under our laws you can't drill there at all, period, and DEC, you know, no matter what regulation or additional information DEC requires, our permit system, I mean, our zoning law prevails, and that's sort of an issue for the courts to decide.
So that has to go to court. The DEC is not going to make that statement, no, you can't drill there, because they have a law against it.
Right, and what the DEC is going to do is what they define here, and courts will decide, and of course many towns feel that courts would decide favorably because they have decided favorably in mining cases,
right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean they'll do the same.
Okay, thank you. I understand.
That's very interesting. That's the bottom of that first page. So it does sound like, you know, if you're in violation of the local law, well, just tell us how you're going to mitigate it. And it does, yeah, that's interesting. Joe Martens was on the commissioner of DEC was on WHCU this morning. There was a little bit of conversation about that. And they did say that they weren't going to sort of get in the middle of the land use fight, basically. Jonathan, just to be clear, the document you've given us, the underlining is new language that, as compared to the previous document from 2009?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. This is very helpful. Okay. David Squires, Finance Director.
We had a bond anticipation note sale last week. We had seven bidders, and we ended up with a net interest rate of 0.59%.
You're following up, right?
We had a bond anticipation note sale, and we ended up with a rate of 0.59%. Which is a pretty good rate. One hasn't been the lowest rate of any municipality, but very positive. But along with that, I believe we mentioned the purchaser, Jeffries and Company, an investment bank, wanted to have a bond rating on the notes. And so I'm happy to report, and I put it in your box, a copy of their analysis of Tompkins County, and they continued. Our bond rating and the stable outlook for our finances is described in there. As you recall, we fought many years to get a negative outlook pushed away from our rating, and we were concerned about it because just before we talked to the rating analyst, Westchester County, the highest credit in the state, was painted with a negative outlook because of the operating environment, and also they do make a note about the challenges of a tax cap environment, which they are not theoretically going to penalize people because it's a tax cap, but they wanted to know that that could affect people's ratings in the future.
Thank you, David. We'll take good news anytime you can give it. Any questions for David?
That was only one. He said he had two pieces of good news. What was the other one?
All right. Thank you very much, David. Do we have any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. I have the consent agenda. I'm going to go through it, and if you have anything that you would like to be pulled off, please just let me know. Resolution A, adopting a whistleblower policy that implements New York State Labor Law 740 and Civil Service Law 75B, and that supports the county's compliance program and code of ethics. Resolution B, adopting the county compliance. Okay. Resolution E.
C.
I'm sorry, C.
Off.
Okay. All right. Resolution D.
Off.
Resolution E. Now I'm on E.
Off.
You don't have any consent agenda. All right, one more. I'll try this. Resolution F, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, Probation and Community Justice Department. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Frank moves. Leslin seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, we are... Thank you. That's unanimous. I would like to move the F&I report so that I'm guessing Bill Sesney can go home. If we can do it before the break that Jim likes us to take at this at almost this time. So, Carol, would you go ahead with just take the resolution on which one is it?
Okay.
The public hearing.
Okay. I would like to move, I'm very pleased to be moving, Resolution G, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain commercial, that title was changed. Is there a correction? There should be a correction. This is the old title.
Do we know what the change is?
Sorry. It should not say commercial industrial because we very specifically took out.
The title should be what's actually in the law. If you go to the next page and have the law, that would be the title.
Sorry?
Yeah, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law A of 2011, yeah. And then read the title from the local law.
Okay, Cal, you want to read that there? Certain traffic?
I'm not sure where you... Oh, I see. Okay. So, do you want me to go back to
go
the word amending?
Read the title.
We're authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number A of 2011.
Now go to the next page.
Yeah. Amending, a local law, sort of a third of the way through the page, on the next page there, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain traffic that would materially injure county roads.
Okay.
And I so move.
Thank you. Mike. Mike seconds. Everybody got that? And that is... In the resolved.
Yes.
Line 12.
And.
Okay, line 12, we want to delete commercial industrial. Is that right? That's all that has to change? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
I apologize for the.
Assume that's friendly, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. All right, any discussion?
Do you want me to? I was prepared to introduce it if.
Well, why don't you see if there are questions, and then you can respond. Frank?
Just a point of information first. This is on the public hearing. Will you permit discussion of the local law itself, proposed local law itself?
Well, yeah, because...
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
I want to, maybe Carol or Mike, I want to ask two questions. Can give us an update on how... that special committee that involved the local contractors and whatnot, what their reaction was to this, if you've seen it. And secondly, under number four, permittee, I want to make sure that there's clarification that the permittee is the person responsible for the project generating the truck traffic. In the case of gas drilling, is that perceived to be the landowner?
I'm sorry, Frank, I didn't hear that last.
The permittee is the person responsible for the project generating the truck traffic.
Yes, that would be the person, according to our law, as I understand it, and Jonathan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that would be the person applying for the permit to build the project. In the case of...
I just want to hear it out loud, and it does not mean that it's the landowner.
Yeah. In the case of gas drilling, it would not be the landowner. In the case of... this law will apply equally to anybody building any kind of project. And if you let me... I would like to step back and introduce it and make all of that clear. I think it might help. So in the case of a landowner who is carving out a cliff to build a huge project on their own individual property that would generate this many trucks, yes, it would, the landowner then would be responsible. In the case of an institution building a very, very large, extraordinary large project that will generate extraordinary truck trips, that would be whoever is implementing that project. And in the case of gas drilling, as I understand it, that would be the permittee, which would be the same people applying to the DEC, as I understand it. Is that correct, Jonathan?
Yeah, in a case of gas drilling or any other thing which requires a DEC permit, it would be the party who got that permit would have to be the permittee for purposes of this law.
So I do think it would be helpful for me to step back and say a little bit about the purpose and the approach and remind people of what we did back in February and that we took it back.
But Carol, please don't lose sight of my first question. A reaction from, have the individuals had an opportunity on that special committee?
If I don't get
Carol, then I'm going to ask that we take a five-minute recess. I think we're past where Jim Blizzard needs to change tapes or whatever he uses these days. All right? Let's come back here in 5 minutes. Thank you.